David, I love that candle you're burning. You seem to always have a great candle burn.
I am very aware of how a room smells. When you've spent over a decade with a 75-pound Labrador Retriever and two teenage boys, you start to worry that your house smells like the inside of a gym bag.
I would imagine so.
You know what I wish we'd had for the last decade?
What?
That Puro Air purifier we now own and use all the time.
I love my Puro Air too. Did you know that indoor air quality can be up to 100 times dirtier than outdoor air?
Yes, I lived with two teenage boys. I can 100% testify to that.
In 30 minutes, this device will remove allergens, dust, smoke, dander, and gases from the room.
Gases from a preteen boy?
I'm dreading when my nephews start making those gases.
Just you wait. Thankfully, Puro Air uses a stronger type of filter called HEPA 14 that filters pollutants at a microscopic level and is backed by scientists from Harvard and MIT.
You wouldn't drink unfiltered tap water, so why would you breathe unfiltered air?
Thanks to my Puro Air purifier, I feel like I can breathe again.
Check it out at getpuroair.com. That's GetPuroAir.com.
One more time, getpuroair.com. Check it out now.
Hey friends, welcome to the Raising Boys and Girls podcast. I'm Sissy Goff.
And I'm David Thomas.
And I'm Melissa Trevathan.
And we're so glad you joined us for this conversation. Let's dive in. Luke Smallbone is an Australian actor and one half of the four-time Grammy Award-winning pop duo for King and Country with his brother Joel. They have generated over 2 billion streams, 10 GMA Awards, one Billboard Music Award, and one American Music Award, as well as performances on Good Morning America, The View, The Today Show, The Tonight Show, and CMT Crossroads. Luke executive produced the 2016 independent film Priceless and the 2024 film Unsung Hero, a story about his family's immigration to America. Helen Smallbone grew up in Australia as the daughter of a Methodist minister and the youngest of four children. Trained as an occupational therapist, Helen's greatest desire was to serve God and become a wife and mother. At age 20, she married the love of her life, David Smallbone, and over the next 14 years, they added seven children to their family. Their daughter, Rebecca St. James, who we love, and two of their sons for King and Country stars Luke and Joe Smallbone have collectively earned five Grammys. When not busy with her children and grandchildren, Helen is dedicated to sharing her passion and love for God with those around her. She is an author and the co-founder of Mum Life, a ministry of mothers uplifting mothers, and co-host of the Mum Life Community Podcast. Enjoy our conversation with the first mother and son we've had on our podcast, Luke and Helen Smallbone.
Y'all, we have been looking forward to this conversation for so long, and thank.
Is that true? Can counselors lie?
No.
That's a great
We're
question.
Truth tellers.
We
no.
are truth tellers. Yes, we really have.
Oh, that's so good.
And have thought the world of both of you, known of you even before we got to see your movie, but to get to see an early screening was such a gift. To see the film, we're so excited about it.
Well, thank you for taking the time to watch it. It's one thing to Joel and I have been joking lately. It's one thing to listen to a 3-minute song. It's another for people like, hey, we've got a movie that's going to be close to 2 hours for you to watch. Will you do that for us?
Yes.
It's a bigger commitment.
Well,
so thank you.
We're here to say it's well worth it.
Yes.
It's an incredible story. Beautifully told story too. And we're excited to talk about it.
Great.
And there's not enough for families to do together anymore.
Yes.
And so for families to be able to enjoy the movie
like that,
together.
Yeah.
Yes.
That was the hope.
The story of yours. Yes. So Unsung Hero, for anyone who hasn't heard of it yet, everybody needs to go see it. We are such fans. And it's your family story.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so fun to sit with you all after experiencing that, because we feel like we have a leg up and we know y'all already when you don't really know us. But it opens with your move from Australia to the U.S. So will you talk a little bit about what that experience was like for you both?
I'll let mom speak in greater detail in a second, but to set the stage a little bit, so dad, he was a concert promoter in Australia, just for some context, living in Australia, and he brought a tour from America to Australia, and the tour didn't go very well, and we lost everything that we had as a family. We lost the house, we lost the car, we lost the life savings. And so dad was looking for a fresh start for his career, and he thought it would be a good idea to move his six kids to the other side of the world. And then mom, who was 6 months pregnant at the time, and that's what we did. But soon after we arrived in Nashville, dad lost that job. And so we were sleeping on beds made out of clothes. We were didn't have any way for our little sister to be born in a hospital. I weren't always quite sure where the next meal was going to come from. Didn't have a car, and honestly, that's just the highlights, right? The list went on and on, and so I've actually spoken about that story and some semblance of that story for pretty much since For Key & Country's been going, and I've had a ton of people come up and they were like, "Hey, you guys should write a book." And the truth is, you know, Joel and I were homeschooled, so we don't read or write very well, you know. And,
hey. That's
a tough. And so we thought maybe we could make a movie and said, that is a joke, Mom. But I went to a friend of mine, and he was an LA producer, and said, "Hey, you know, I would love to work with you guys again. We worked on another film many years ago." And he said, "Hey," I pitched him the idea. I just said, "Hey, what do you think about this idea, my family story? There's something about it. It resonates with people, and it does something kind of unexplainable." And so anyway, we put it into development. And the heartbeat behind it is actually kind of what you guys do. I'm a big believer in family. I think that family is more important today than it ever has been in the history of the world. But yet we don't quite value it as much as we should. And if there was a thesis statement for the film, it's really this. Mother Teresa says, if you want to change the world, go home and love your family.
So much.
Helen, did you always know you wanted to have a big family?
Pretty much. Both David and I come from families of four. So we're three boys and a girl. Both our families
both
are the same.
Wow.
Both the oldest in each family are named David. So we had so many similarities within our family. I think we both knew that four was probably where we were sort of aiming at. but David was loves kids, loves the family. And so he was the one who kept on sort of saying, "Yeah, I always thought we talked about like four to six, you know." So number five came along, which we're very glad because that's Luke. And then after
Luke. Were there any that you weren't so glad about?
And then after Luke, he sort of said, "Yeah, but didn't we always say we were going to have six?" And so if I hadn't have had his encouragement, we probably would have stopped at four. I feel like four is a great size family, actually. It's sort of one's just like mind-blowing because everything, it changes your whole world.
Right.
Two felt pretty easy, like, you know, it was a piece of cake. Three's a jump, I will say, because you've only got two hands. You know, you can only hold two kids. Three, you've got to trust. and then That's four, once you've nailed three, it sort of didn't seem a whole stack more. The thing I think a lot of people forget about larger families is they stop when it's the hardest. Like they stop when, you know, three probably is the jump. So they stop at three because it is the jump. And they don't realize that their older child's getting older. And the older child actually can make more contribution, that you're not so alone. And then it just, I don't know, it keeps going. But one of the things that was really, really special to me was seeing older kids embracing younger kids, the younger kids. I remember when I had Libby, Daniel was 12, just on that borderline of maturing and changing into his, you know, he's an adolescent, like coming into teenage years. And he just couldn't get enough of holding that baby.
Wow.
And it just melted my heart.
Sure.
Like sharing your younger kids with those older kids is just so beautiful.
Yeah, it is.
That is sure something. I don't know if we've ever even talked about that, but counseling over the years, I have felt like kids in big families are resilient and independent and responsible in really beautiful ways because I think they're just built in opportunities at home.
And I think sometimes we underestimate what kids can do these days.
Oh,
you know, we're spoiling them and we're we're sort of pandering to them. And I think a larger family, because there's so much more that needs to be done, you actually, it's more hands on deck, you know.
Yes.
So it's sort of like when parents are pushed and you've got more responsibility, you share the responsibility with everybody, and it creates for greater cohesiveness mm-hmm. within a family. It creates greater joy because you're together and you're doing things. I don't know. I loved it.
It's kind of like you're doing a family ropes course every day. Challenge.
In some cases, you're not too far off. Yeah,
great. Well, will you talk about that, Luke? Yeah. What was it like growing up with seven kids?
Look, I loved it. Courtney and I got four kids of our own. And ironically, it was funny sitting here and mom talk about raising kids and birth order that she came from. But we have three boys and a girl, which is both her and dad came from.
Isn't that
three boys and a girl. And if you do the statistics, once you've had three of the same gender, to change is almost, it's like you're in the single percentage points of the likelihood of being able to change that. I don't know why. But apparently that's what I read. And, you know, all statistics are perfectly accurate, right? but no, I love being in a big family. It's funny. Mom would say that she was only ever raising three kids at a time. And it's true because my older brothers were good to me. And for the most part, they taught me everything that I needed to kind of know for the most part. Obviously, mom and dad are taking the chief responsibility.
Sure.
But like, if you're going to go hang out with friends and you're immature and you're going to get a little knock on the side saying, hey, man, if you want to hang with me, you got to do blah, 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 blah. Right. And it really taught me, you know, how to be as a young boy. I was very grateful to my two older brothers, actually, in high school. My older brother, Ben, was a senior in high school, and Joel was, I think, 10th grade, and I was in the 7th grade, and they allowed me to go everywhere with them, which is very uncommon. Mm. And for the most part, that, you know, you got to think. So by the time I'm getting to high school, I'm very well versed in all kind of the social things. And so it was a gift for me. I couldn't speak more highly of being in a big family. You have to, you know, there are complications. There are pros and cons to everything. It's like buying a car. You know, you get Consumer Reports, and there's like the pros of this and the cons of this. The pros are that you're in a tribe. And you're a part of a team. The cons are, if you do feel left out, it's going to be difficult. And so you have to, and then that becomes a parenting thing, right? To make sure that you as a parent are identifying what your kids actually need and seeing the ones who might feel forgotten and then coming and reinforcing. But if that doesn't happen, you're going to have a kid that feels forgotten, or you're going to have a kid that's feeling like, I only get noticed if I achieve something. And those are obviously things that are, you know, complicated long term, if that's what you always feel. So but I really enjoyed it, and I part of the reason why Courtney and I have four, which nowadays people look at us and like, you have a ginormous family. I'm like, well, we do. Oh, I come from seven though, and they're like, whoa, you know. But I loved it.
That's good to hear.
Helen, I understand the movie releases, I think, on your 49th wedding anniversary.
It does.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
And we'd love to ask you, just what have you learned about balancing marriage and parenting over the decades?
That's a good question, because I think it's so easy to get the balance out of whack. Mm. I see, because a mother's heart, I think, is always for her kids, probably first. And it's so easy for us to so focus on our kids that we forget our partner, who's our husband. As a woman, as a mum, as a wife, I think you've got to sit back every now and then and just say, where are my priorities? Where am I pouring my heart? Have I have this imbalance? Because the foundation of the family is the marriage. Mm. It if you let that go and you put greater priority on the children and you're not investing in your marriage, then it's going to affect the children in ways that you can not conceive. So to me, you've always got to come back to that love relationship between your husband and the wife. And for David and me, part of what we would do to pour into that marriage relationship is that we would go away. Believe it or not, we've got a big family, but we managed to get away quite a lot, just for a night or two, just on our own, just to sort of, I don't know, get back on the same page of just recognizing the love that we have for one another. And it just helped put in balance the whole family. But that the relationship to your husband as a wife has to be the priority.
Mm.
Sissy, I am in 4 states this week.
Oh my goodness, David. What time zone are you in?
I don't know, but I hope it's close to bedtime, whatever time it is.
It's not.
Bummer. I do actually know what time it is. It's time for me to take my vitamins. My watch just reminded me.
Well, that is an important thing to remember each day.
You know what I don't have time for?
What?
Going to the store to get vitamins when I run out.
Me neither. With all our travel, I can't find time to get to the store and buy all the things I need in life, vitamins included.
Guess what? With Hiya, you don't have to.
I love Hiya and have them at my house for Henry.
As I've told you before, and I'll remind you again, they can work for big kids as well. I take them all the time. Typical children's vitamins are basically candy in disguise, filled with 2 teaspoons of sugar, unhealthy chemicals, and other gummy junk growing kids and grown-ups like me should never eat.
That's why Hiya was created, the pediatrician-approved superpowered chewable vitamin.
Hiya fills in the most common gaps in modern children's diets to provide the full body nourishment our kids need with a yummy taste they love.
Formulated with the help of nutritional experts, Hiya is pressed with a blend of 12 organic fruits and veggies, then supercharged with 15 essential vitamins and minerals, including vitamin D, B12, C, zinc, folate, and many others to help support immunity, energy, brain function, mood, concentration, teeth, bones, and more.
See, I need all that.
Hiya is designed for kids of all ages, as David has proven, and sent straight to your door, so there is one less thing to worry about.
I love that they ship straight to your door. Parents and people who travel like us need one less thing to worry about.
We've worked out a special deal with Hiya for their best-selling children's vitamin. Receive 50% off your first order. To claim this deal, you must go to HiyaHealth.com/RBG. This deal is not available on their regular website.
Go to HiyaHealth.com/RBG and get your kids the full body nourishment they need to grow into healthy adults.
David, did you get your taxes finished? What did you say? What are you eating?
Okay, I am obsessed with these new Chipotle barbecue kettle chips.
Will you share?
I would have, but they are all gone.
Where'd you get them?
Thrive Market.
How much do we love Thrive Market?
I could record an entire podcast about that topic.
You know who else loves Thrive Market? Patches. She loves the surf and turf meaty littles from The Honest Kitchen.
I love that Patches has a surf and turf situation going on.
From pets to kids to grown-ups, everyone can find things they love at Thrive.
Thrive Market is my go-to for all my grocery and household essentials. And the convenience of getting everything online then quickly shipped to my doorstep is a huge time saver.
I love that Thrive Market carries brands with the highest quality ingredients and sourcing methods. They restrict hundreds of ingredients across their food and cleaning categories, and I can use their on-site filters to suit my lifestyle needs.
Whether you're looking for organic kid snacks, low-sugar alternatives, or gluten-free pantry essentials, you can curate your own shopping experience with a few clicks.
And as a Thrive Market member, I save money on every single grocery order. On average, I save over 30% each time. They even have a deals page that changes daily and always has some of my favorite brands. David, how much did you save on your last order?
I saved $32.
I saved over $12.67.
How much did Patches save?
A lot. She's ordering more than I am.
You got me hooked on ordering frozen foods. I got salmon, bacon, and pork this month.
Something else I love is when you join Thrive Market, you are also helping a family in need with their one-for-one membership matching program. You join, they give.
I love that too.
Save time and money and shop Thrive Market today. Go to thrivemarket.com/RBG for 30% off your first order, plus a free $60 gift.
That's thrivemarket.com/RBG. thrivemarket.com/RBG. Luke, the movie was a very honest portrayal of your family's struggle and how your parents lived a life of faith and trust in you all. How would you say that has informed your faith as a person, as a parent, and really even your life's work?
Yeah. No, look, it's funny. I've had a lot of people come up and be like, hey, man, you had to be terrified when you came to America, you know, because, you know, you guys were going through some really unique things. Or they say, or do you just not remember it? And I was like, oh, no, I remember all of it. And they're like, well, how did you feel, you know, growing up in a household where there was seemingly so much uncertainty? And I think when I first started to get that question, I was a little bit puzzled. I was like, just because there's uncertainty doesn't necessarily mean I feel unloved. And so I think that there was a lot that was circumstantially going on. Mom and Dad were very honest with us about, you know, maybe some of the struggles financially. I was keenly aware that we were poor. I was keenly aware that things were difficult. I was keenly aware that we were Australian living in America, you know, because we talked differently. And, you know, even though we, you know, coming from Australia to America, obviously it's still English, there's nuanced cultural things that are happening that you just can't quite put your finger on, you know. It's just like, you're like, I feel different. And, you know, then you would have someone come up and talk to you about X, Y, Z, and you're like, I'm definitely different, you know what I mean? But I think that there's something about being very honest with your kids, but still covering them in the love that obviously mom and dad had for each other, but in their love for us. And so, yeah, I learned to mow lawns when I was 5 years old, which sounds fascinating. But I've always loved to mow lawns. I still love to mow lawns. I mowed my lawn the other day at the new house for the first time. But there was, we were given a lot of trust. We were given a lot of opportunity. I think a lot of parents out there are struggling with their kids in the college ages of like, I just wish they would mature. And I think what I would say is, but if you start that maturation process at 14, 15, and you start giving them an unbelievable amount of opportunity and responsibility, man, by the time they're college age, they're pretty good at those things. Mm. But there is going to be an adjustment period of time if it's all brand new. And for us, right, wrong, or indifferent, we were given a lot of responsibility very, very young. And I think we're better for it. You know, and I felt like we were working together. I mean, I remember going to do jobs and never really thinking about what I was getting paid for it. It's just what you did, you know. You'd go rake leaves, and I hated raking leaves, but it's really important.
That's why
you
used to go and sit on the mower sometimes.
I used to say I'd go talk to the owners because I wanted to make sure that we get the business, you know. And I was like, if I'm 6 years old and I'm going to talk to the owners about their life stories, they're going to employ the 6 year old again.
That's,
you know what I'm saying?
That's true.
Anyway.
Great point. Wow.
Those are great words.
Yes. And what a great reminder that whatever's going on in your family, the love is what does provide the stability.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes. Thank you.
So, Helen, we'd love to ask first, how many grandchildren do you have? And also,
Which are her favorites?
We can camp out there too. We'd love to ask too, just what encouragement would you offer to grandparents and to parents who want to offer a legacy of faith?
I think your point, David, on legacy is huge. It's something that we don't think about or talk about. We're so sort of in the weeds doing that a lot of times we don't think about the legacy that we're leaving. And I think that is huge. I think that's huge. And for me, my understanding and what I have poured my life into really is recognizing my children are my legacy. And now as a grandparent, I'm one step removed, you know, and I'm a firm believer in he's going to raise his kids. I'm there when they need me, but he's going to raise his kids. But anyway, that's just for me because I did actually probably parent, I actively parent, hands-on parenting for 32 years. And homeschooled for 20 of those years. So, you know, it's sort of like, okay, you know, I'm done. I'm that box
She's pretty happy to hand the baton.
I'd imagine
but
so.
The legacy still continues. Mm. And for me now, my primary role is to be there when I'm needed, in whatever capacity that looks like, to be there to support them either with some advice, wisdom, whatever you might put of being on this earth for
perspective,
yeah, yeah, an objective opinion, whatever. And then the third is, and probably I think the most important is to pray. Mm. I'm so, David and I came from godly parents who supported us by praying, actively praying for our family and for us. And I know that we were protected in our very active years of crisscrossing America and traveling with Rebecca for her career. I know their prayers were vital for us, and I want to offer that same legacy to our children and our grandchildren. And so prayer has now become probably the greatest priority in stepping into more of a matriarchal grandparent role.
I have a friend who's in his 60s. And he still says with regularity, I'm the product of a praying grandmother. Uh-huh. Wow. And it's exquisite to hear him talk about that relationship and that he lived his life knowing that she was praying over him at all times. So I love that you shared that. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we can often underestimate the power of prayer in our families, with our children, in our home. You know, I'm also a big believer.
Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with samples.
Yes, for the samples, because seasonal allergies are no joke in the state of Tennessee.
Or Kentucky, where I spend the summers at Hopetown. I spend most of the summer outdoors and could not function without allergy relief.
Luckily, for those of us who live with the symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D.
This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, a runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, an itchy nose and throat, and sinus congestion and pressure with ease.
You just described my exact state in waking up, minus the need for coffee.
I've been taking Claritin D for my allergies for years, and it's been an absolute life changer. I can be outside with the kids at camp without my eyes watering like a fountain, and I can speak without feeling like a frog has jumped into my throat.
But at Hopetown, a frog could jump into your boat or your bed, and Claritin can't really help with that.
That's true, but they've got allergies covered. Ready to live life as if you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin Clear.
Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter.
Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription.
Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear.
Use as directed.
And it's sort of weird to think, to make this statement knowing that the homes are Christian homes. But I sometimes think even as Christians, we rely too heavily upon outside influences, the church, schools, whatever, to be inputting our kids. The primary input comes from inside the home. So I'm a big believer in actually encouraging parents to invite Jesus into the home every day in relationships, practicing forgiveness, giving grace, getting on with one another, loving each other well, praying with one another, you know, covering one another when they go, covering our kids when they go to school, you know, just praying for their needs, praying for, I don't know, just everyday normal things so that the children grow up with an active faith, seeing an active faith being lived out in the home. And I think that's the best gift we can give to our kids. It's not just learning about Jesus. It's actually living with Jesus. Mm. And it's a big difference.
Yes, me too. And I'm going to add one more thing that I know that you're doing because I got to watch it. Two of Luke's kids came in with him, two boys, and the first question was about tomorrow's disco at school, and the boys immediately said, Nana, are you coming? And you said yes. Mm-hmm. So not only are you praying for them, but you're playing with them a lot.
That's right. That's right. That's good. That's
good. Yes, I think grandparents have a unique ability to delight in kids, and that is so woven into the fabric of how they see themselves. Mm-hmm. And it was obvious you're doing that.
We currently have 15 and a half grandchildren. So we're in the middle
She's
of
there
this.
They're in high demand, let me tell you.
I bet.
In the middle of this year, we will have more grandkids than we have kids, like children and spouses. Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Well, this season of our podcast is about the ages and stages of parenting kids. Yeah. And we would love to know, have you each had a favorite stage of parenting?
Well, I mean, maybe I'll go first because I don't really have much authority on this. I'm always like parents, they're like, oh, well, can you give me some parenting advice? And I'm like, my oldest is 11. And I'm like, I'm always sitting there going, I want to know when parents have gotten their kids to 30. Mm. That's to me like when you've kind of done it. And the reason why 30 is because at that point, you know, statistically, they're probably married. Yes. They're probably well on their way, maybe mm-hmm. with their first or second kid, and that the job is kind of done, mm-hmm. right? So my perspective on my favorite age, you know, I'm not done that yet. But I will say and maybe this is just a political answer where it's like I'm not giving an answer, but I have so enjoyed, my kids are 11, 9, 6, and 3. Mm. And I really enjoy the dynamic of all of those ages right now. Meaning I probably, when they're 30, I'll go back. Mm. I really loved it when they were 8, 9, and 10. Right. You know, maybe I'll come back. But what I love right now is with my 11 and 9-year-old, we can actually have intellectual conversation. There can be a, hey, this happened at school. Like, well, why do you think that happened? Or they'll talk about business stuff. They'll come up and be like, hey, you know, my oldest son's gotten this phrase of saying, Dad, you're getting scammed if he doesn't think it's a good deal. So he'll look at, you know, you go to the store and he'll be like, hey, that's $100. And he'll be like, it's a scam. Because to him, he thinks it's worth 60. You know, so you get to have those kind of discussions. Mm. My 6-year-old has a purity in spirit that he's shocked by evil. Mm. And that's a wonderful thing to actually sit there and a kid come up and be like, hey, he pushed me, or he's shocked by evil. There's something really powerful about those discussions. And then with my 3-year-old, you just get this innocence of just joy that is reckless. Their emotions are high. Their emotions are then they're low, mm-hmm. and they're learning right and wrong. They're learning like what is Dad proud of and what is Dad not proud of, mm-hmm. and what a joy that is to be able to shepherd that tender little spirit. And she's my only girl, mm-hmm. so for me, I have a hard time looking at all of those ages currently. Mom may have a different opinion, but I have a hard time looking at those ages and going, I prefer one of the over the other, because I think that those ages actually fuel each other. Yes. I've got my 11-year-old saying, hey, well, you've got to treat Evie's heart differently than you're going to treat Phoenix's, who's 9. Mm. And so it's almost like cyclical in some cases for me. And I've really, really enjoyed that part of it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
For me, I enjoy a challenge. I don't think I've ever shied away from a challenge, particularly a challenge offered by a child.
That's the mother I know right there.
But I do know, so I'm not a baby mama. I mean, I see mamas that just love the babies and like, oh, I've got to hold a baby. Oh, they're so, I mean, I enjoy babies, but I'm not like,
She doesn't enjoy them that much.
I could let somebody else look after the babies. But a toddler, once they're walking and they're talking and they're exploring the world, oh my goodness, the whole mothering thing comes out in me. And I'm so very aware that probably the preschool ages are the foundation of a child's lifetime. Mm-hmm. And so those are the ages where that probably is my favorite stage, the preschoolers, because I'm aware you lay a strong foundation with preschoolers. You teach them how to be self-disciplined. You teach them how to be kind. You teach them how to think about others. Their innocence and their beauty and their love of life and the joy they exude of just seeing a new day, things that we as adults forget. Mm-hmm. You know, they remind us of, I don't know, just some pure joy, really.
Yes.
And you hone their personalities in those first 5 years. And it seems to me after that, once you've got a strong foundation laid, which is in those, yeah. I think those first 5 years, then really you're just doing tune-ups. I mean, mm-hmm. you're just reminding, you're just mm-hmm. like refining. Mm-hmm. But it's those first years that are so powerful. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it's always the little ones.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Beautiful.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I like them when they get older, but it's the joy of the older comes then.
I have a question for you. Do you like me more or less now? Did you prefer me as a toddler?
I do like the friendship thing of as kids come into adulthood. Ooh, yeah. I really enjoy that too. But again, I think the foundation.
You're still going back to that? Yeah, I get it.
From when they were little.
I was teasing, but hey, that's fair.
Yes.
I'm realizing as I'm observing the two of you and loving your conversation with each other. We have never had a mother and son on the podcast.
This is
so fun.
This is the first interview we've done.
Just the two of us. Usually
you've interviewed me, but we've never been interviewed as mother and son before. So
it is really rich to watch relationship. And
you know, my mother, I mean, I could get emotional if I speak about this too much, but all of us boys are seven, there's seven kids, and there's five boys in the middle. And if you are to see us five boys in the room and mom walks in, you will probably in the next 10 minutes see each one go up and give them a kiss, mm-hmm. give my mom a kiss. There is such reverence and honor for who she is. And man, at the end of the day, I am shaped. You know, she talked about those early toddler years. Those were the years where I was taught forgiveness, where I was taught right and wrong. I was taught fear the Lord. And those have become habitual. Those are the things I'm now teaching my kids because it was so strong. Mm. It was so life-changing. Mm. She once told me, I'll never forget this statement. You probably don't even remember me saying this, or you saying this to me, when we were young, mom used to have these great just little phrases. And she would say, there was one time when I was, you know, I couldn't go to the baseball game because it was canceled because of weather or a friend was coming and, over to the house or they got sick. And she said, Luke, are you disappointed? And I said, yeah, I'm disappointed. And she said, it's good to learn how to overcome disappointment. Mm. And what I've gotten to see is if you actually just look back at this movie, the movie illustrates that statement. Mm. It's filled with disappointment. Yes. But man, it's powerful and good when you learn how to overcome disappointment with the faithfulness of who Jesus is. Mm. And if you want your kids to walk in love with Jesus, they have to see that evidenced in the home. Mm. And you know, the greatest, I think, gift that mom gave me was I got to see evidence of that in the home.
Mm. Wow. You all.
We cannot say enough times in this interview, go see this movie, you all. It is so rich, so life-giving, and...
Well, and there is no question that after hearing the two of you talk, everyone who's listening will want to see it.
No
I now want to watch it again after encountering the two of you. And even to your great point before when we were not recording yet, actually, we might have been recording, so we might even play it. But you were saying that it's so fun to do podcasts as an artist because people don't get to know you as well through your music. And I think, man, I feel like everybody's going to love everything you both do. Your entire family does that much more for hearing your hearts.
Oh,
so
you're sweet.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. Well, yes, the film comes out April 26th, and it is, you know, when they say it takes a village to raise a child, it takes like a freaking city, a nation to promote a movie. So if anybody's out there and they want to go see it, please do, because it means a lot to us. And once again, I believe in the power of family. I believe in the power of motherhood. Mm. I think it shapes the next generation. Mm. And like I said, still my favorite quote, you know, if you want to change the world, go home and love your family. And that's the hope for the film.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. What is the best parenting advice you've been given?
I don't necessarily, you guys live in the world of, you know, academics in a good way and a lot of books. And I read a lot of books, but I've never really had a phrase or like a lesson that I can usually just grab hold of the sentence. Mm-hmm. It's usually the way that they live. Mm. You know, it's usually the example in which I think the thing that mom touched on it before, but you know, my dad was a wonderful father. Now, not necessarily because he showed up to every one of my baseball games. Actually, he showed up for very few. But that's not my memory of him. My memory of him is how he loved my mom. Mm. And there was safety in that. And so I think when it comes to parenting, it sounds crazy to say, but you know, if you want to be a great parent, make sure that you have great love for your spouse, because they will emulate the love that is shown, you know? So if you're, you know, if you're a couple that yells a lot, the kids are probably going to yell a lot. You know what I mean? And so my point is less about necessarily a phrase, but it's more about an attitude of life. And if you can focus on that marriage, and man, it's a reminder to me. I got home late last night and I'm up first thing this morning, and I saw my wife for a few minutes, and I just thought to myself, I need to make sure later on that I really need to connect, because it's been a minute, you know. And then that's not saying that I'm getting it right. It's just me saying, oh, you know, I need to make sure that there's time put there. You'd be amazed at how comfortable your kids feel if just that the marriage is working, you know.
I think for me, I've endeavored throughout raising children, and even now with adult children, is keeping open communication. And sometimes that means being a good listener, not actually saying much, because when you're a listener, and kids feel the freedom to be able to talk to you without judgment, without criticism, with a level of openness. I don't know, when we're heard, but when we feel heard, it increases our strength of relationship. And so endeavoring to keep, I think that was a foundation of our family, because when David and I were in the midst of raising children, we still had, I mean, bench seats in the front of cars, and there was still a middle seat between mum and dad. And, you know, that middle seat was the most vied for position in our van, because then we'd be close to mum and dad and we'd be able to talk. And we sometimes would go for Sunday afternoon drives. Yeah. And I found the car to be the best place for just communicating. Sometimes to sit down, and I hear of parents who take kids out for a meal and stuff like that, I think that's great. But a lot of times just sitting across a table from somebody is actually a little intimidating.
Yes.
You know what I heard someone say?
With people, you know, where you're focused on something else, but you're just with somebody, huge.
Someone said to me just the other day, this week, I think I was doing something, and they said, oh, you know, most of parenting never takes place across from each other, takes place side by side.
Yeah. Mm.
I thought that was a fascinating statement.
Yes.
You know, so it's in the car, it's working on the project, it's doing something else. Because then someone told me that, you know, a lot of humans are like clams. Sometimes they're not open. But when they're open, you got to find those moments that they're open. I think for kids, you got to find those moments that they're open. And when they're open, you can really pour in. But if they're not open, you know, it's not a whole lot you can do in some cases.
Yes. Yeah. Y'all, thank you. This really has been such a rich conversation. So excited for folks to encounter this film.
And we can't thank you both enough just for giving us your time and the honesty that is evident in conversation with you and is translated through this movie that I can't wait for folks to experience.
Hey, thanks for the time. Appreciate it.
Yes. Thank you.
David, what a team we have that we get to call friends who help make this podcast possible.
Amanda Young, our operations manager.
Chris Starrett, our engineer and producer.
Our management team at KCH.
And we are thrilled to be a part of the That Sounds Fun Network.
Our music was created by the insanely talented Dave Haywood of Lady A.
And if this podcast felt helpful to you, please consider subscribing, liking, sharing, all the things.
We are grateful for you and cheering you on always.